yes, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't want to fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate, rub the lamp, lad.
Welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub, the podcast. We're joined today by Mark Williams, who's co-founder of Pulp 27. Hello, Mark.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. So Mark's agreed to join us to talk to us about his latest business venture, which is Pulp 27, which he'll get on to tell us about in a minute. So Mark, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Pulp 27?
Okay. Right. Well, it's a long-term passion of mine with coffee, having met my current wife 7-8 years ago now. Spent some time in Holland and picked up the coffee culture. Already a barista, having operated and run a number of businesses that had restaurants and cafes in them. So already supplying coffee, but didn't really appreciate the coffee culture that was so strong in Europe and especially Holland. And that's really where we got a taste for it. And the seed of the idea was to run a coffee or coffee shops initially. And that's still a concept we want to pursue as a next phase. But we really felt that such a growth industry in Europe and especially in England now, that it makes sense to get onto the supply side of coffee as opposed to the end of coffee. So that's really where we started. So we took a long time. It's been years in the making. I've been to London and the London School of Coffee, and I acquired the skill.
I didn't even realise there was a London School of
Coffee.
Ah,
there is, yes, yeah, there is. And trust me, I didn't appreciate how difficult it was either. I thought I'd breeze in, do a course, come out, be a qualified roaster. Oh no, big shock. No, it's quite an intensive course. It was 4 days, but it was crammed into long, long hours. And then we had a 6 to 8 hour exam at the end. It was great. It was with like-minded coffee individuals who wanted to either, you know, learn the mystic dark art of roastery or already roasters in some cases and wanted to specialise. Fantastic course, learnt a hell of a lot and ended up with the qualification. Took that, came back and then started on the business plan.
Okay, so just tell us a little bit about exactly what the offering is with Pulp 27.
Okay, well, Pulp 27 is an artisan coffee company. We supply specialist or speciality artisan coffee, which is small batch coffee. It's roasted, small batch. It's from sourced from sustainable sources, supplied in small batch, roasted in small batch, and supplied to coffee shops. Coffee shops, hotels, sort of, dare I say, I don't want to sort of pigeonhole it, but it's not for necessarily cafes that just want to serve or hotel, let's say, not hotels, or pubs that just want to serve coffee, as long as it's coffee, not overly worried. It's for people that really appreciate good coffee, such as myself, you're interested in the various different flavours. You like to know where it's sourced. You appreciate the fact that there's a difference between light roast and medium roast and dark roast. And once you get that bug, there's no turning back. Unfortunately, it does tend to make you into a bit of a coffee snob. So you tend to go to places that otherwise you would have enjoyed the coffee. And now you sort of think, oh, it wasn't right. It's not what I wanted. So it limits your appeal. But that's pretty much what we're at. We're a supplier of artisan coffee. And our business, we supply both, or three, we supply by the bag, directly to your house, free delivery, or you can supply subscription. So you'll pay and you'll get that subscribed coffee delivered through your letterbox in letterbox friendly packaging, either every week, every 2 weeks, every month, whatever frequency you choose. And now we supply in wholesale as well to, like I say, to the likes of specialist coffee shops, hotels, etc. That appreciate and want their customers to appreciate fine coffee.
And just for our listeners, you've got a website where you operate all this from. Do you want to tell us what the web address is?
Yeah, absolutely. It's obviously www.pulp27.com.
Okay, that's www.pulp2727.com. And so people go on your website and they can effectively create an account.
Yeah, you can. It's really user friendly. It guides you through it, but very simply, you stage one, you choose your coffee. We currently run in a signature blend called the Martello, which we're very proud of. We also produce four single origins and a Peruvian decaf.
Sorry, Mark, that Martello blend, mm-hmm. that is your own signature blend.
You have
effectively designed that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we took a long time to develop that. We knew exactly what we was after, and it took a hell of a lot of tasting and cupping and trial and error until we got it. And we're very proud of it. It's made up of 70% Kenyan and 30% Brazilian. It's a very, very, it's a medium, light to medium roast, but it's a very sweet, wholesome coffee. It's absolutely gorgeous. Love it. That is our signature blend, and that is the one that we also supply two of our own coffee shops that we run, and it's very popular. In addition to that, we also offer four single origin coffees as well, and a Peruvian decaf. And as I say, they are all available via by the bag subscription or wholesale to specific accounts. And as we said, the website, you literally go and you choose the coffee, you choose your frequency, you choose whether you want it ground, whole beans. And even if you tell us what machine you've got, we'll grind it to your machine. And then, you know, you enter the checkout and it's done. It's that simple.
You need to know whether you're a dripper or whether you're a plunger.
Need to know. Yeah, absolutely.
So I've had that clarified for me today, so I've learned something new today. I am indeed a dripper for all sorts of reasons. But what I liked about the website, Mark, and this is part of the taking sort of coffee to the next level, is you can read about the story of the coffee, where it's come from, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important that there's so many coffees. You know, you buy a coffee from the supermarket, you'll notice they don't put a roast date on it. So it could have been roasted 6 months, a year ago. I mean, our coffee, we recommend that you should drink it within 6 weeks of the roast date. The fresher it is, the nicer it tastes. There's no point in buying artisan specialty coffee if you're going to leave it 6 months before you drink it. And you buy coffee from, you know, supermarkets and wholesalers, you'll often find it's just a best before date. Well, you know, or a use by date. I mean, you can use the coffee years later, but that doesn't mean it's going to taste anything. It's shallow. It's weak. It's horrible.
Yeah.
So, and that's not what we're about. You know, we wanted people to experience fantastic coffee, gourmet coffee. And, you know, simplistically as well. So you can literally, as I say, you can do it and it will come through your door. It's in a lovely packaging, go straight through your letterbox. So we make it as easy as we can for you.
Yeah, because you bring in the raw bean, if that's the term. Is that the correct term?
It is, yeah. Well, the green bean.
The green bean. Mm-hmm. You bring in the green bean and then you're roasting it to your specific, like to your sort of standard and sort of trademark, I'm trying to think of the word, your brand almost,
yeah.
If you like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not all of them. A lot of, you know, we also work with guest roasters as well. And there's sort of 300 plus artisan roasters in the country. And we use others to supply as well. But we, you know, our own particular Martello blend, you know, we've designed and you know, we roast as well. But if it's, you know, big volume, we utilise others as well, but only from suppliers and sources that we trust and we work well with.
I mean, it's all opening up a whole new world to me, because people have said to me before that they're sort of coffee snobs, but they're arguing between Costa and Pret and Starbucks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is taking it to a whole new level. This is like proper. You're literally there in the.
It is
in, with the farmer almost.
Well, it's if you want to use the correct, it's called third wave coffee. I mean, the first wave was back in the '60s, which was instant coffee, Very tasteless, very horrible, but you know, we all drunk it. Second wave was introduced in the 70s, 80s, and that was the likes of the chains that, you know, such as Starbucks, Costa's, etc. And they introduced coffee on the high street, which is, and your frothy coffees, you know, your cappuccinos. Then it naturally evolved to the next stage, which was the third wave of coffee. And that's where people, you know, like ourselves, that wanted that little bit more, wanted to know where the coffee was come from, didn't want sort of mass-produced coffee, wanted, you know, small batch roasted coffee. Coffee that you could get, you know, it's light roasted, you get so much taste from the coffee beans. So, you know, you'll get, so in our coffee, you'll get tastes of, or notes, as we call it, of burnt marmalade is one of the classics. But you'll get, you know, chocolate, hazelnuts. There's so many notes that you can get when it's lighter roast, hipster coffee, artisan coffee. And that's our coffee.
Okay. So just to sort of strip it down a little bit, obviously you and your wife have a love of coffee, and you really engaged with the coffee culture in Europe and stuff. And then you start to put your business plan together and start to research. I mean, how do you even begin to think, right, I need to engage with a coffee grower in Kenya, for example? What's the process with that?
Well, you can go directly to the farmers, but that's not always recommended, because there's issues to actually get it imported into the country. So you tend to work with importers, you know, established certified importers, which we do, and we'll buy the green beans from them, and they will only work with, as I say, sustainable sources, local farms. With all our coffees, and with them, you know, we get to see, before we accept it, we get to see who the farmer is. We get to, so we can go, you know, bury right down into the farmer, their children, you know, the history of their farm. We know that they're small firm, you know, small holdings, and it's supplied directly from them to them, imported. And then we'll buy the green beans directly from them.
So when people are drinking your coffee, they're absolutely 100% guaranteed that, you know, that farmer has received a fair price for their labour.
Yeah, when we supply a coffee, we don't just give you the coffee, we also give you all the origin information on that coffee, all the tasting notes, etc. So you get the full, because that's part of the process, it's a theatre as well. You know, you're not just drinking the coffee, you're getting to, you know, read it. Okay, this comes from, you know, Kenya, or this comes from Brazil, or Guatemala, you know, Honduras, etc. And you can see where it's come from, the farm, certification as well applied to it. So you get that complete journey from the, you know, the seed right through to the cup, and that's what it's about.
So I'm very interested in how somebody takes a passion and turns it into a business, because we often talk on Leaders and Managers Hub about that. When you have a germ of an idea, but it's you're passionate about it, people are driven to move that thing forward, and it's getting that balance right between, you know, being flexible enough to sort of move and shape and change your ideas as you learn, but also sort of being tied and emotionally invested into that original passion that sort of sparked it all off. So what has that sort of journey been like for you?
It's been interesting. This particular, because this is a passion, we do run a number of other businesses, and I've been involved with a lot of businesses in the last 20 years. Some I've enjoyed, some I don't enjoy. Some businesses are there because they supply an income, and you need an income. You've got to survive. We're in the fortunate position that we have other businesses that provide our income. So we're not, you know, we weren't solely relying on, you know, Pulp 27 to feed the family, so to speak. You know, it has been a passion. It's been a long time coming. Because other things are in the way, like bills to pay, mortgages, and, you know, debts to pay back, and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's been growing gradually and all sort of organically to the point where, you know, I was ready to launch it. And I wasn't going to launch it until I knew 100% that I had all my ducks in a row and that we were going to do it properly. Because, you know, if you're just running another company that's thousands of others that do something very similar, then fine, you just follow the same format maybe. But this is a little different. It's for people that truly love coffee, And you can't just do that on a whim. And, you know, you've got to take your time and do it properly. And that's what we've done. So it's, I was hoping to have launched it last year. I did launch it last year on the 24th, actually, of December. But I was hoping to launch it, you know, months before. But it wasn't ready. And so we, you know, we waited until the time was right.
That, and that's often quite important. It's that fine balance between how do you, like, do you keep refining and refining and refining before you go to market, if you like, or do you just at some point go, you know, enough's enough, we need to get it out there? I guess for you, because you, the website is incredibly slick, it looks beautiful, and obviously because that's the main way that people engage with your product, that had to be absolutely right.
It did have to be right, because that, as you say, 90%, well, initially 90% of our business will come through the website, you know, until the wholesale starts to grow and develop. But it had to be right. But I take your point. I mean, my previous career before I started my own business, I was a procurement director for a company called Hoborn Automotive in the automotive industry. And it was owned by an American organization. And we were responsible. I was responsible for developing, you know, companies, suppliers that set them up, put them strategically positioned that they could supply us on a long-term basis. So one of the things that we use was a method called lean manufacturing. And with lean manufacturing, if you know the term, you're taught a number of techniques and mindsets. One of those, which has always stuck with me throughout the business, is called plan, do, check, act. And basically, without teaching you to suck eggs if you know this, but with this current business, you plan what you're going to do, you do it, you check on the results, and you act on the changes. So it's a continuous improvement. So, you know, we're by no means there yet, that we're going to tweak it, we're going to, you know, refine it, but it was good enough to go. It was right, you know, it was right to launch.
It's a bit like an agile project management model that we use, which is often used in software development projects, as opposed to the traditional construction-style cascade model or waterfall model, as some call it, which actually can be very inflexible because it's almost paint by numbers.
Yeah.
Whereas you need to, as you say, plan it, do it, test it, be prepared to change it.
And
funny enough, we in our episode 6 cast where we talked about goal setting, you know, one of the topics we touched on was, you set your goals and you have your various objectives along the pathway to achieving your goal, at each staging point you got to completely reevaluate whether you're on the right path, whether it's working for you, whether you've got to where you need to be by a certain time, and be prepared to make adjustments, and in some cases be prepared to knock it on the head if it's really not going to be worthwhile. And like, that's a challenge for any entrepreneur anyway. So you have a passion and you invest in it time and blood and sweat and tears and everything else. And for some people, it doesn't work. And sometimes people try to push things for too long. Maybe they should have cut and run a lot sooner.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to manage that balance. But you work with your wife. She's also your business partner.
She is, yeah. You know, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love coffee. I can make coffee. I'm barista trained, so you know, I know how to run, set up cafes and run coffee shops. But setting up my first almost e-commerce site, no experience of that whatsoever. I'm 50 years old. Social media, yes, I operate it, but do I know enough about it? You ask my teenage children, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But thank God I've got teenage children when it comes to social media. So, you know, it's a big learning curve for us. You know, yes, we know about the product and I can roast and I can talk about coffee all day, but I need to know more than that. So I need to surround myself with people, which I am, but, you know, people that are good in their particular areas. So, you know, the website side, the social media side, Google Ads, AdWords, they're all things that I've not had to deal with in the past, you know, and now I'm having to deal with it, and it's blowing my mind.
SEO,
but it's
settings and all sorts of crazy terminology.
That's right. Yeah. It's moved forward in the last so many years, and you've got to catch up and move with the times. So.
I mean, that's very important what you just said there about, like, so you know your strengths.
Yeah.
And so for so long there's been a push that, oh, you know, people need to work on their weaknesses and strengthen their weaknesses. But actually, you know, there's a school of thought that says, no, you should really concentrate on your strengths and surround yourself with people who complement your weaknesses.
Absolutely.
And in some cases, for stuff that is like way out of reach of your close circle, is to outsource it.
Yeah.
Because there are experts out there who will do it in a lot quicker and effective, more cheaply probably in the longer term, than you trying to struggle to do it.
Well, it allows me to focus on what I do best, and that's my business and growing my business.
Well, our listeners are listening to this now thinking, well, Ray, why didn't you outsource all your technical stuff for the podcast? Because you constantly seem to be having problems with it. But it's a passion of mine, and I want to learn it and improve upon it. It's a very interesting, but just like, obviously, because you work quite closely with your wife, and you know, there's some people will say, oh, never work with family, and you know, how have you both been able to manage that? Because I've seen you both in a work environment, obviously, and you seem to work very well together.
We do. We do complement each other very well. She's definitely my better half, without doubt.
You can be honest here, Mark. You know, she's not going to hear this.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I can't take that kind of risk. You know. I've had some experience of working with family and friends, and without going into detail, I don't recommend working with family and friends, but I think that depends on the type of personality you are. Whilst I believe I'm a team player and I do know how to outsource, I'm also a very individualist. You know, I have a very strong opinion and I do things, and sometimes it's very difficult for me to delegate. So I do things. So if the last thing I want to do is turn close family and friends into business partners and employees, because I struggle to separate the two, and as I say, it's ended quite badly in the past.
It can
so
be fraught with
yeah, and it's sure. It's a terrible thing. I don't want to go back to that. So
and sometimes you just want to keep family as almost like non-exec directors who are just they're not directly invested in the business or its success. But they're kind of emotionally invested in you.
They are,
and they're able to give you that sort of third person opinion on, you know, whether it's, Dad, you're doing 20 hours a day, you need to slow down, or whatever it might be, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it is important for entrepreneurs that they do surround themselves with trusted people.
Yeah.
Who aren't part of the organization, but are sympathetic to it.
Exactly.
But not so sympathetic that they won't turn around and say to you, this isn't working for you, it's not healthy or whatever it might be.
I think you like myself, I'm surrounded by, you know, fantastic family and friends who will happily advise and, you know, soon tell me off if they think I'm going down the wrong path or I'm working too hard or I'm slipping into bad ways, etc., etc. But do I ask them for business advice? Do I ask them if they think this is going to work or not? No, I don't, because I do believe that, you know, and this is something I would advise other budding entrepreneurs. If you've got an idea and you want to put it into a business, don't make your family and friends your first port of call to ask if it's going to work, because they will have different reasons for their answers. I think you're best off, you know, to ask other business people, ask them to prove to you that it's going to fail. And if they can't prove to you it failed, then you're possibly on to an idea. But I wouldn't necessarily go down the family and friends for business advice, because they're not always in business. They may be in a completely different ilk of life, and that's not necessarily the best advice you want to get.
Yeah, and like you say, they will have other perspectives that may cloud their judgment a little bit.
Exactly.
Which, you know, in turn can impact your judgment.
Yeah.
It is a great piece of advice, and I think networks of entrepreneurs, and I know there are a number in and around Folkestone, various networks, some are on Facebook and various other places, where, you know, you can meet with other entrepreneurs and business people. And the one thing I've found about most entrepreneurs and most established business people is that they're actually very happy to share their knowledge.
That's been my experience as well. Yeah.
And when I first embarked on being a business person myself, I wasn't sure. I was surprised by that. I really was, because I had seen business from being an employee in the construction industry, where it's actually quite competitive and adversarial, and there's an awful lot of unhelpful, non-constructive behavior that goes on. And I was genuinely quite pleased when I started to interact with like local business people here in Folkestone, just how genuinely happy they are to support you to succeed, even if potentially you're a competitor. They're kind of like, they're happy to share the things that the hard lessons that they've learned to support you not to have to go through that.
I think it's great. Fantastic. And that's the advice that you want.
Absolutely, yeah. Because it's going to be warts and all, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. You really want someone to prove to you that your idea is not going to work, not flower it up and, do you think it's going to work? Do you think it's going to work? And encourage them to say, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Get them to try and tell you that it's not going to work based on their experience and, you know, valued experience. And if they can't, then, yeah, you might be onto something.
Yeah.
So
in terms of the journey that you've been on... Gary, one of my co-presenters, never likes the word journey, but but I like the word journey. Yeah. He's not here. I'm using journey. The journey you've been on with Pulp 27 or with any of your other entrepreneurial endeavors, like, has there ever been a time where you've kind of sat there late at night thinking, I've really got this wrong? Or, you know, when you start to lose a little bit of your confidence?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think it's ever not happened. I think, I mean, when I left, as I briefly touched on, a very successful, lucrative career, and took a risk, and 20 years ago, and set up my first children's play centre, which was my first venture into my own business. And it was a huge project. It was a big project. It took a big risk.
And they say don't work with children and animals, man.
Oh, I know.
Straight in there.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it was a big, big learning curve. And you know, I mean, I remember it was launched with it was called Invicta FM. It's now bought out by Heart FM, and it was launched by the local radio station there at the time in Whitstable, and big affair. And we literally had there was hundreds of people at the launch, and it was queuing up all the way around. It was a big children's place, and as I say, and we still had rubble in the front door, and we were sweeping up as we go, ready, and we had them lined up outside, and all the radio was there, and it was a big thing. Oh, I mean, it's true, it was so
if
to the wire.
If ever you're going to have a crisis of confidence, that's when it's
my word.
Be.
But it was great. But it's like all these things. It's one of those things. Well, I look back and I think, right, it couldn't get any worse than that. I don't think I've ever been as stressed in life as that. But it worked. We made it happen, and it was really successful.
But that's interesting, because a lot of entrepreneurs are really doers. And they have these situations that occur in their lives. And it's only when they reflect back on them, really, that they realize how by the seat of their pants it was. But
yeah,
there's a little bit of adrenaline in there, right, as well, you know?
It's, yeah, absolutely.
It's not all bad.
Yeah, I mean, if you expect to succeed in every single venture you put in, then you're in the wrong industry. You should work for someone else. You know, you have to calculate risk. And yes, it is a calculated risk, but you need to know that there is a good chance that you'll fail. And if you do fail, you need some protective measures in place, a contingency plan in place, to say that, you know, that you don't tank and sink too badly. But if you can't manage risk, and you can't accept that there is a high chance that you will fail, then you shouldn't do it. But if you can accept risk and manage risk, then, and, you know, and you've got a good idea and you've put a plan together, then, you know, I say you've got to go for it.
Yes. Or maybe if the risk in and of itself is too much for one person, then, you know, maybe seek a collaborator or a business partner.
Absolutely.
And share some
of
that risk.
Yeah, I mean,
and maybe bring in some expertise that you don't sit with.
Yes, absolutely. Which goes back to Pulp 27. As I say, I'm particularly ignorant in terms of, you know, website, when people talk about coding and everything, it's straight over my head. You know, these are just names and words that I know are important, but I don't understand them. So I have to outsource that to experts that do. And, you know, and I'm on a big learning curve. But there was a big risk, because I ventured into a business that, yes, the product is coffee, but to get that product to the end customer, I need all the surrounding framework of the websites and et cetera. And these are areas that I don't know a lot about, so I've had to outsource it. So
just in terms of like your supply chain, because obviously you're bringing stuff in from outside the EU, and obviously after the 31st of January, it's everywhere is going to be like we're outside the EU. Has that been particularly challenging? I know you said you went to a specialist sort of supply chain logistics partner.
Yeah, an importer.
So, was there any particular risk there? Or again, was that one of those things where you could have maybe have gone direct to the farmer, but actually it's safer for you and a better use of your time to partner with an importer?
Absolutely. It's a much better way of doing it. You know, I've got full traceability this way. They have the clout to get the products over. They've got sufficient stock that, even if something went particularly wrong, we've got, 6 months to a year's worth of stock that we can pull on. So, because green beans, unlike roasted beans, green beans will last for a long time.
Yes.
You know, the shelf life is a hell of a lot longer. So, we've got sufficient stock around us that, if Brexit happened and it happened badly, it wouldn't ultimately affect us for quite some time.
Yeah, yeah. So, That's good. No just-in-time supply chain.
No. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
That's great. Was there any other particular or specific messages you wanted to bring across for Pulp 27 or anything else?
No, just, it's like all things. It's, it's a fantastic product. It needs exposure. It needs awareness. Please, click on, take a look around, have a browse, and, ask any questions you've got, and please order.
So, again, just to repeat the website address for Pulp 27, Mark?
Yeah, www.pulp27.com.
And that's the numbers 27.
Yeah, numbers 27.
And honestly, folks, it's a very, very easy website to navigate your way around. If I can do it, anybody can do it. And that's fantastic. Mark, it's been brilliant.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in and sharing your story. I hope Pulp 27 is a great success. I'm going to go online in a minute and place my own order now that I know I'm a dripper. And I'm going to forever take that piece of knowledge with me. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very, very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, Ray. Cheers. They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate, rub the lamp, Aladdin.